The accused Times Square bomber Faisal Shahzad has delayed his second court appearance to give his defense lawyers more time to negotiate. And they need it. These attorneys are part of a defense bar in the Southern District of New York, helping to define new law in the modern era of terrorism. These are the lawyers who are used to tough cases. They defend rapists, murderers, organized crime bosses, and drug dealers. But they tell WNYC's Elsa Chang that when it comes to terrorism cases, they confront challenges they never see anywhere else.
David Runke represents a man named Syed Hashmi. A week ago, Hashmi was sentenced to 15 years in prison for trying to help someone deliver waterproof socks, ponchos, and sleeping bags to Al-Qaeda. Hashmi's already been in solitary confinement for nearly 3 years.
It's in that building on the 10th floor. It's a highly secure area. It's where they have...
We're standing outside the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Manhattan. Runke's pointing at 10 South.
In fact, I'm not even sure I should be pointing out where 10 South is, although it's...
It's the most isolated, locked-down floor of the prison where Hashmi is kept. Runke has spent more than 30 years trying to keep some of the most violent criminals off death row. But he says terrorism cases are the absolute hardest because the government takes every element that creates an unequal playing field against defense lawyers and amplifies those elements to the maximum degree in terrorism cases.
So to the extent that they throw a lot of resources at any case, that's tenfold when it comes to terrorism.
Runke is one of the best-known terrorism lawyers in the country. He represented one of the men charged with the U.S. embassy bombings in Africa and helped defend one of the 9/11 detainees at Guantanamo. Runke says in these cases, he runs up against more obstacles than anywhere else. Just meeting a client in the same room often isn't allowed. When he visits Hashmi here, he has to peer at him through a thick, high-security screen that offers a distorted, pixelated image of his client.
It feels more like a solid piece of metal than it does like a screen because the holes are small and the metal is big.
That means he can hardly make eye contact, which has made it really hard to get to know his client. It's a huge handicap, he says, because it's up to him to turn these defendants into living, breathing human beings in front of a jury one day. But at least Runke gets to see his client. Some defense lawyers have to wait years before their first visit.
Padilla could not speak to anybody.
Andy Patel couldn't see his client Jose Padilla for almost 2 years after his arrest in 2002. Padilla, a U.S. citizen, was declared an enemy combatant for allegedly planning a radioactive dirty bomb attack.
I don't say this with any great pride, but my real achievement for Mr. Padilla is that I got him indicted. He was held without being charged. That was something we thought went out when the Magna Carta got signed.
Padilla, like many terror suspects, faced extra security measures while in solitary confinement. Sometimes defense lawyers have to spend all their time fighting these measures to get their clients so much as a toothbrush. And that's time these lawyers desperately need to spend on the rest of the case. They're going up against prosecutors who freely acknowledge the government has a huge advantage.
Yes, the U.S. government has a great deal of resources, and they put them to use in terrorism cases.
That's Eric Bruce. He spent 10 years as a counterterrorism prosecutor in Manhattan. He says when prosecuting terrorism became the top priority of the U.S. Attorney's Office, the government threw more manpower and more money into winning these cases.
So they're going to leave no stone unturned. They're going to talk to every witness they possibly can and gather evidence from every corner of the world.
That's easier when you have FBI and CIA agents at your disposal, as well as the cooperation of foreign governments. Instead, defense lawyers like Runke arrive at a dusty court clerk's office in Tanzania and immediately get hit up for a bribe.
I think it's called an inconvenience fee. You know, that's just not common experience in the United States. You don't go to a courthouse and expect to be held up for a gratuity to get a public document.
Documents are what eats up all of Runke's time in these cases.
Although this doesn't look organized, all these papers spread out all over the floor have a meaning and a purpose.
We're in his office. During a large terror case, it would be stacked to the brim with boxes of documents. Both sides might have to review more than a million pieces of paper, pages full of emails, FBI reports, and endless transcripts of intercepted phone conversations. In terror cases, prosecutors will always have more lawyers and more staff to comb through all of this. and they'll usually have a head start. Runke says often the government has read through these documents for years before they even bring charges. So once the defense lawyers enter the picture, they have to digest these pages at breakneck speed.
And now you have to make sense out of them. And, you know, there's a document that you can look at that means nothing until 5,000 documents later. You say, oh, this links back to something I saw 2 weeks ago. I wonder where that is.
But then let's say that document is classified. That means you can only read it again by heading back into a windowless secret room at the courthouse, where every classified document is behind a combination lock. Nothing can be photocopied. Not even your notepad can leave the room. The only thing you can take with you is your memory. Joshua Dreitel represented one of the men charged with the U.S. embassy bombings in Africa. And he says relying on memory is especially tough when the documents are full of foreign names.
There's Abdullah Ahmed Abdullah, there's Abu Muhammad al-Masri, there's two Abu Muhammads, there's two Abu Abdullahs, who's got three, everybody's got four or five aliases. So when you're reading those, it's like, it's numbing. You have to go back and look and say, okay, this is him. Now, who is he again?
So why does Dreitel take on these headaches? He says there's a simple reason. People call terror prosecutions a national security priority. But he says there are two ways to look at what it means to be secure.
There's physical security, which is other people's jobs, and then the security of values and ideals and principles that we live under as a society. And someone has to defend those. And that's my job.
I asked him, would he even represent Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? And he said yes, without a doubt. But he said he would have to turn down that appointment. He's already represented so many related terrorists, there would just be too many conflicts of interest. For WNYC, I'm Elsa Chang.